It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegfright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Well, it's not only a violation if they sue you anyway, they violate the law if they threaten to sue you. So there are two violations. Number one, if they call you up on a time-barred debt and say, you know, if you don't pay, we're going to take legal action against you. That's a violation. Of course, then if they go further and actually file a warrant in debt, that is clearly a violation on a time-barred debt.
Private attorney John Gale talks about time-barred debts, creditor harassment, and a possible way out with consumer credit counseling. And during this week's question and answer, you'll learn the steps a landlord must follow to bar a guest from visiting you and what you can do to challenge that. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 82, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. As a result of this year's Virginia General Assembly, indigent former homeowners who are appealing unlawful detainer eviction cases that are based upon a foreclosure, where the unlawful detainer case is against the former owner and not against a tenant, soon will have to post an appeal bond. For years, all defendants in all eviction cases had to post an appeal bond to appeal from general district court to circuit court, a bond that can be as high as 12 months' rent in advance. In 2007, the requirement was removed for indigent defendants who wanted to appeal, unless the case involved trespass, ejectment, or non-payment of rent. Because homeowners who were foreclosed upon did not owe rent, they could appeal without bond if they were indigent and then challenge the underlying foreclosure in circuit court. But no more. Now a former homeowner who loses an eviction case in general district court will have to post an appeal bond, even if the borrower is indigent, but will have 30 days to do so instead of the usual 10 days. The new law takes effect July 1, 2010. In other news, this year's Virginia General Assembly did improve the law slightly for tenants facing eviction by their landlords due to non-payment of rent. Under current law, unlawful detainer eviction lawsuits must stop if the tenant pays all amounts owed: rent, late fees called for in a written lease, attorney's fees called for in a written lease if an attorney is involved, and the court costs, no later than the first court date. If actual payment is made, the case must be dismissed as paid, but this may be done only once in a 12-month period. Under the new law, if a tenant appears at or before the first court date with a written commitment from a local government agency or nonprofit agency, called a redemption tender, to pay all amounts due and owing, the tenant is entitled to have the case continued for 10 days after the first court date. If everything is paid by the continuance date, the case is dismissed. If not, the landlord is entitled to immediate possession. Under the new law, a tenant can redeem with a redemption tender or with actual payment only once every 12 months and cannot do both within that 12-month period. The new law takes effect July 1, 2010. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is interrogatories. Interrogatories are a set or series of written questions asked of a party or a witness to a lawsuit to be answered under oath. It is part of the process for discovering facts before a trial. The questions have to be answered within a certain period of time and may be used as evidence in the lawsuit under some circumstances. The number of interrogatories that may be asked without the court's permission is limited in order to keep the questions from being a means of harassment rather than a source of information. The questions also can be objected to as not relevant to the lawsuit, as burdensome, or as not clearly worded. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and interrogatories is this week's legal term of the week.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. It's time for this week's question and answer. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Hello, my name is James. I'm from Henrico County.
Welcome to the show, James. What are we talking about this week?
Well, I had a question about my landlord not allowing me to have guests in the house that I rent. She also lives in the house and has said that I cannot have guests or visitors while she is not there. And she didn't say it in the beginning.
And did she say anything to you in writing, or was this just verbal or spoken?
Verbal.
Okay, well, it's a bit of a tricky situation because she does live there, but at the same time, you are a tenant and you have rights. And one of those rights is to make reasonable use of the premises and to have reasonable accommodation for guests and visitors. So no, she cannot flatly say you can't have guests or visitors. If she doesn't want the legal duties that go along with being a landlord or a landlady, she should not be renting out part of her house. If she chooses to rent out part of her house, she needs to understand that you, not she, has the right to use and occupy the premises and to have reasonable access to guests or visitors. Now, obviously, you're responsible for the conduct of your guests or visitors, and they shouldn't be doing anything unlawful or anything that would violate the lease. If she wants to bar or ban a visitor, there is a specific procedure in the Code of Virginia for doing that. And that is she has to do it in writing, in a written notice that is given to your guest or visitor and given to you. And that written notice has to describe the conduct that the landlady objects to, and that conduct has to violate some term of your lease or some provision of local, state, or federal law. And if you do get that written notice and you disagree with it, you have actually the right to challenge that in court by filing what's called a tenant's assertion in the general district court. Now, it sounds like your landlady hasn't done anything like this at all.
No, she has not.
Well, at this point, she has no right to bar or ban your guests or visitors. Now, in this situation, of course, I always suggest making some sort of a permanent record. So one of the things you might consider doing is sending a letter to your landlady. I know it's kind of weird because she lives in the same place, but assume she gets mail there in a separate box or maybe the same box. But you write to her and you do a proper business letter, her name and address, your name and return address, and you say that, you know, with all due respect, you have a right to have guests and visitors, you are a tenant, and you have the right to use and occupy the premises in a reasonable manner. Is this something that you might consider for the future?
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea.
Okay, well, very good. Thanks a lot for being on the show. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Consumer Law Group in the near west end of Henrico County, and we're talking with John Gale, an attorney at the Consumer Law Group, and we'll be talking about consumer rights and, in particular, harassment of debtors and what debtors might do in response. Welcome to the show, John.
Glad to be here, Marty.
Now, we're in tough economic times right now, so I'm sure we're seeing a lot more harassment of debtors. What in particular are you seeing?
It seems like probably the number one growth industry in this economy where jobs are needed, a lot of people are migrating to debt collectors. That is one of the larger growth industries, job marketing companies or job marketing opportunities, and consequently, there are a lot of debt collectors out there because of the number of debts that are not being paid, and these debts are being charged off by many of the creditors, or if not charged off, they're at least being given to debt collectors from the creditors, who then are aggressively trying to recover those debts from the debtors.
Now, are these debts actually owed, or are some of them too old to be collected, or they've gone from hand to hand so often you can't really tell if they're actually owed?
Well, actually owed is probably not a great term, because technically, or let's say morally, many people feel they owe the money. The real issue is, are they legally enforceable debts? Because many of the debts that are attempting to be collected are out of date. We call them time-barred. By a time-barred debt, I mean that the law requires that a creditor file a lawsuit to collect this debt within either 3 years or 5 years of the agreement to the contract. And if that creditor or if that lawsuit is not filed within the 3 years of default or 5 years of the default, depending on if it's a written contract or an oral contract, then the debt is time barred and they can no longer enforce that contract. That doesn't mean people don't feel morally obligated to pay for it if they got the services or the goods, but they are not legally obligated to pay for it. Or let's put it this way, it's not enforceable. That doesn't stop, however, the debt collectors and creditors from implying often that the debtor is going to be sued for a debt that is time barred, which is a violation.
And what is it a violation of?
Congress has passed a statute that is of great benefit to consumers called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. That act applies primarily and pretty much only to what are considered debt collectors. A debt collector can be a law firm. It can be an independent company who is trying to collect a debt for a creditor. It can be a division of the creditor if that division is considered a debt collector as defined under the statute. And the statute requires that anyone calling anyone in the audience for a debt to identify themselves as a debt collector, because that gives you the red flag to be careful what you say.
So what should someone do if they are contacted by a debt collector, especially if it's a debt collector that they don't recognize? They've never had any dealings with either that debt collector or the company that the debt collector claims to represent.
Well, the first thing I would do would be to record, if you can, down on a piece of paper who called, the name of the company, exactly what they told you. I would not advise you being particularly candid or open about the debt. I think you can talk to them. You certainly can say, I dispute the debt if you do. You should say that you dispute the debt if you do. If you're unaware of the debt or don't know who it's from, you would want to dispute the debt. You would then want to write a letter after that phone call, because the law says that if you indicate that you dispute the debt, and then if you that they that dispute gives them the right or the understanding that that debt is not considered valid, and their obligation at that point is to go back to the creditor to determine if this debt truly is valid. If you then write them a letter within the 30 days of the first contact, if you write them a letter and tell them that you dispute the debt and that you would, they have to then validate the debt. What that means is they've got to check out if the debt is valid and then send you information to indicate that they have done so and that the debt is valid. And they are not allowed to continue collection and attempts to collect the debt during that 30-day period after you are given that notice.
What if they don't send you that validation information? I mean, you requested it and they ignore you. Are they, first of all, are they allowed to continue to contact you after that 30-day period is up? And secondly, if they never send you the validation information, do you have any remedy against them?
Yes. Well, number one, they're not supposed to continue any collection activities until they have validated the debt and given that to you.
Even if that takes more than 30 days.
Yes. And if they do that, in other words, if you don't receive the written information from them validating the debt or verifying the debt, then they then pursue collection activities against you, like filing a lawsuit or threatening you or calling you up, then they have violated the FDCPA, Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. A question often comes up as to, well, they sent me a letter, Mr. Gale, saying that they verified the debt and that it's, you know, it's a valid debt. There is a debate and or a conflict in from a number of the cases about what constitutes valid validation. The Fourth Circuit has, which is where we are in Virginia, has basically said that the validation does not have to be extensive. They just have to tell you that they validated the debt and give you some relatively limited information, and that's sufficient. But if they don't validate the debt within that 30-day period, or if they continue to try to collect before they validate the debt, you have a violation of the FDCPA.
And what if they sue you on what you have described as a time-barred debt? In other words, it's been more than the 3 or 5 years, depending upon whether it's oral or written, since you fell into default. It's an old debt, and they decide to sue you anyway. Is there any violation of the law there?
Well, it's not only violation if they sue you anyway. They violate the law if they threaten to sue you. So there are two violations. Number one, if they call you up on a time-barred debt and say, you know, if you don't pay, we're going to take legal action against you, that's a violation. Of course, then if they go further and actually file a warrant in debt, that is clearly a violation on a time-barred debt. You see, the audience should know that the business model of many of these debt collectors is that they will file suit in a general district court against hundreds of people in one day, knowing that 99% of those people are never going to show. They then are able on time-barred debts, but those people don't show up. They then get a judgment against those people on that time-barred debt, which then, in a sense, reages the debt or starts the debt all over, and then they have a valid judgment at that point and can then go garnish their wages even though the debt is time-barred.
Just because it has been reduced to a judgment.
Correct.
Now, another thing we wanted to talk about was these debt management plans. I'm sure people have seen the advertisements on the internet, on television, or on the radio. We can cut your payments in half, call us, get debt relief. What's the truth about those agencies?
Well, I think the public needs to be very careful. There are some very good agencies. We do that here at this firm and other companies do it. In my opinion, you would not want to engage or go with a company that does not have an attorney, because it's really those debt settlement firms are attempting to go to your creditors and get them to settle the debt at a percentage of what you actually owe. Many of those companies that they go to are creditors. Some of them are actual what we call debt buyers, who buy these debts at 10 cents or 5 cents on the dollar. They'll buy $1 million worth of debt for $100,000 or $1 million worth of debt for $50,000. And if they can collect 15 cents on every dollar and they've paid 5 cents on every dollar, that's how they make their money. But once they see an attorney representing the debtor, and if that attorney actually seems to know what he or she is talking about, and they don't want to deal with an attorney, that goes against the efficiency of their business model, which is to threaten people. They know that they're not going to be able to get anywhere with an attorney who knows what they're doing, standing as a shield or as a guard between the debtor and the debt collector or the creditor. And then they will often settle those debts for a percentage of it and give people time to pay that. So in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with debt settlement. There's nothing wrong with debt management. But you need to be very careful about the companies that you're using. Make sure they're reputable. Get references from them. And make sure, in my opinion, that you have an attorney actually doing the representing of you rather than these companies that have no legal representation. Because if they don't, then if I'm a creditor, I'm not going to feel particularly threatened. If I'm a creditor or a debt collector and I've got a lawyer calling me up saying I'm representing Mr. Smith and we're going to stand with Mr. Smith in any judgment that you may attempt to or go after him, or we're going to be on the lookout for any violations of federal debt law, then I'm going to be a little bit leery and want to get rid of that case and take whatever I can get. And that brings up a whole other issue whenever we have time to talk about the judgments that these people take, these creditors and debt collectors get against people, when the information that proves their debt is with another company that isn't even around at the time they try to get judgment against you. In other words, when the debt collector sues someone in this audience on an older debt, they have to be able to tell the judge, this debt, here's the contract, this is the paperwork we have, and consequently you should give us a judgment. And of course the question is, well, you're not the creditor, how can you represent what actually was paid? They often try to do that by an affidavit, which is often not admissible, but only a lawyer would know that.
So it sounds like people, if they are sued by a company that they had no connection with, they have no idea who this person is, they need to get legal representation right away.
Get legal representation, and at the minimum, stand up and go to court on the return date, tell the judge that you dispute the debt, and that lawyer, more than likely, even if you're unrepresented, will try to work something out for you. If you get a lawyer, I think they may often drop the entire debt.
Thank you very much. We have been talking with John Gale at the Consumer Law Group about debtor harassment, time-barred debts, debt buyers, debt management plans, and what people should do if they get sued by debt collectors or debt buyers that they have no idea who they are. Thank you so much for being on the show, John.
Great to be here, Marty.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show introduces a new segment, a weekly quiz called Is That Legal? We give you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which is incorrect, and we give the correct answers next week. If you're the first to email the two correct answers, we'll post your name on our show's website and send you a copy of the Virginia State Bar's handbook on your legal rights and responsibilities. Here's this week's question. The Federal Fair Debt Collection Practice Act covers collectors who collect the debts owed to others. Which two practices are illegal under the Act? A. Telling a third party you owe a debt. B. Calling you more than once a day about a debt. Or C.
saying you could be arrested for not paying a debt. If you know the two correct answers, email them by Friday to marty@cvlas.org and be next week's winner. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Last month, Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli found no legal basis for Virginia colleges to protect people based on sexual orientation or gender identity. But did he consider everything? Join us next week when former Chief Deputy Attorney General Claire Guthrie Gustiniaga points out the many sources of law that were overlooked and which grant legal protection to gays, lesbians, bisexual, and transgendered persons. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.